Americans just want inflation to come down. They don't care how the you do it. Just get the inflation to come down.
The masses are insanely underrated when it comes to their ability to have nuance and understanding and a core want for freedom.
Elon is leading the world in the most important areas, and we as NVIDIA are trying to help all these laggards who suck ass at AI by giving them access to some of the tools that Elon is using to kick everyone's ass. If you don't believe that America is the world's biggest and most powerful empire that humanity has ever known, I'm sorry, you just don't understand what's going on yet.
It's just going to be a very exciting year. I mean, I think that's why Jensen doubled down on agents at CES as well. Everyone's going to have an agent doing something that makes our life easier.
What was your takeaway from that? Did you watch it in full, Jensen's NVIDIA thing?
Yeah, I streamed it. I watched the whole thing. I was definitely bored for a good chunk of it because it's not the most exciting. But I think the two takeaways I got is the next $2 trillion industries that he thinks are very real, which are self-driving, and that has obviously implications on Tesla, and robotics, which also has implications on Tesla. So I think the big takeaway was people were like, oh, this is bearish Tesla because Jensen's providing this Cosmos platform that creates synthetic data to then allow the OEMs to train on being able to advance autonomy. And I was like, no. those OEMs don't have any real world data like Tesla. So that's why they need something like this from NVIDIA, which is bullish NVIDIA. It's definitely not bearish Tesla. If anything, it's bullish self-driving as a concept. I just upgraded to FSD 13 yesterday and I got the extra month for free. So I just came back from getting a drive, and dude, it's real. It's fucking real. Really,
so we had you on like a month ago because you had just gotten 12.5, I think, or 12.4, right? Yep. 12.5.24, whatever the hell that one was. And so you just got 13 your car. 13. Okay. How is it? Like, do you notice an improvement? Like,
yeah. I mean, like on 12.5, I intervened a decent amount of times, and it wasn't like bad interventions. It was just one of those things where you want to, you know, make sure things are okay. I've only taken on a couple drives on 13. I have it for the next month, so I plan to really test it out this month, but it's good, man. It's really good. Every time I think of intervening, I realize I don't really need to, and it's just me being a little paranoid, and it's doing its thing. And it's like, it just from start to finish, even finding a parking spot, it's like, it's there. So to me, it's like, you know, the valuation concerns around Tesla are whatever. It's holding this 390 level very well. And I think the reason for that is because every single bank, we're seeing that with Bank of America, Stifel, et cetera, they're coming out and they're like, all right, yeah, we could see it dipping here and there, but we're still putting our price target at basically 500 or 492 because they want to be cute with $8. And I was like, just put it at 500.
They want to look like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, like if we give a specific number, then our DCF actually created an actual. It's like if you're doing a DCF on this, you don't need like a specific number here. It's very simple to me. The street's getting on board with FSD and robotics, and in particular, as long as earnings show some progress on the FSD front, with unsupervised FSD, Texas, California launch, next gen vehicle launching, I don't know. I don't think the stock has to go back to 300 or 280 like the bears are saying. So
what stands between you and either purchasing it outright or subscribing to FSD at this point in time?
For me, to see? So I work from home all day. So I just, you know, for $8,000, it's a bit expensive because I don't need it. And I would definitely subscribe for $99 a month if I was like going on a road trip or something like that. But I don't need it yet. I think if they made it like $3,500, $4,000, I think I would just outright buy it. $8,000 still a little bit up there for someone who's not driving every single day. You know, I drive like maybe 10, 15 minutes a day. But in general, I could see someone who does drive a lot, $99 a month or $8,000 flat out. I don't think they would be afraid to pull the trigger. Like my friend Roy, who goes by Crossroads on Twitter, he has a 40-minute commute every day. And so for him, it's a no-brainer. It's like that 40-minute commute, it's just like well worth the money in terms of the productivity that he's allowed for. But I am thinking a lot more about how much of the stock do I want to own, because this is obviously the future. Like, it's undeniable at this point. And when you experience it firsthand, especially this version, it just becomes really, really exciting.
How big does the unsupervised equation factor into this? Because Reslan, it's right now it's supervised. Even V13 with the performance, you have to pay attention. If it was unsupervised, right? And you knew that if you got into the car, you wouldn't have to do shit. You keep doing what you're doing, but just in a moving box. Like, how does that change the equation?
I think it actually really does change the equation. Because the one annoying thing right now is, like, I can't look at my phone. You know, it's like I can't actually do something. You look away for 2 seconds, it's going to ding you up. So yeah, I think that I still probably would be hard to justify the purchase because I just don't drive enough. But it gets me way closer to making the purchase because it is very relaxing to get in the car, continue doing what I'm doing. We're all content creators, so I'm on my phone all day. I have a tweet idea. Like I want, like there have been times I pulled on the side of the road, stopped the car and wrote out a tweet. Because you know, when you get an idea, like you have to get it out into words and then it might go away. And so to do that on the road without having to worry, which means it has to get really good, it would be a game changer, like for me personally. And I think that that probably could get me over the edge to pay the $8,000. But I don't know how far away we are from that. And that's what I'm thinking. I think that's what all the bears think about as well. Like, how far do you think we really are from stepping in the car and not having to worry about anything?
A year. Yeah. Okay. Especially in certain markets. Yeah. I think the question of timing, with all due respect to the bears, which I don't have a lot of respect for, but I'll just say that just to be nice. That is such a stupid way of thinking about the problem, because what it comes down to is it going to work or is it not? Yeah. If it's going to work, it doesn't really matter when it works, because when you're thinking about it, the context of it working specifically with Tesla, it implies millions of self-driving cars ready overnight with a software update. That's it. Like, so the timing of it is irrelevant. It can be 12 months, it can be 28 months, it can be 39 months. What other player has that? Nobody else has that, right? It makes sense why the bears would think about it that way, because from my experience, when Wall Street looks at the story negatively, they look at it from a timing perspective, because these folks are worried quarter to quarter, right? They're trying to price the stock out 12 months in advance. They're not really thinking about 2 years in advance, 3 years in advance, 5 years in advance. And so with this specific equation with Tesla, It's that, but on top of that, they are fully underestimating the speed at which the software is improving. Amit, I don't really value the proposition of FSD before 12.5, right? You were just not, you know, you were some, correct me if I'm wrong.
The characterization was, I was one of those people that thought I would die in the car and I would never get into a self-driving car. That really was my mindset.
Yeah. And how quickly did that change?
Took one drive to Walmart with my dad, and I was like, "Oh, this is not too bad." This is like
right. you went from deathly afraid of the vehicle to okay, I can see how unsupervised driving, even for my limited use case, could make sense. I'm just not there yet because either the price is too high or I'm not in the car enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Butts in seats.
Yeah. Funny you said that about the post, like pulling over and posting. So Elon talked about adding Grok functionality to the car.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what does that mean? You get an idea. Oh, hey, Grok, can you make this post on my behalf?
Yeah, so I saw that news yesterday, and I thought that's really interesting, because part of the benefit of XAI is that Elon gets to raise outside capital to train Grok. He gets to use all this Twitter content or X content to train Grok, which also is a moat. I mean, you know, yes, he overpaid for X, but Sam Altman doesn't have access to 500 million tweets per second of real-time data. Like, they just don't. And whatever data they're getting, they're stealing it. And eventually there's going to be tons of lawsuits. So X has that. Grok has that. And then the integration of Grok into Tesla means all that data is real-time. Like, hey, Grok, tell me about what's going on in the stock market today as I'm on my drive. And it just filters, it finds Farzad's and Han's Tesla content, give me Tesla updates, reads it out loud. Like, the integrations are pretty incredible. The use cases are incredible. Again, real world use cases of LLMs inside of a real world AI self-driving robot. And to me, it seems like that is the ultimate winner. And that more than justifies, I think, the 8,000 at that point, especially for a content creator.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the reverse is also interesting too, is like, if there is this partnership between XAI and Tesla, because I know there's been like rumors, or like there was actually discussion on X about Tesla taking a stake in XAI rather. So does XAI benefit from Tesla's video feed? Like, do they now have a way to, you know, so what's one of the biggest challenges of creating video that I see specifically with Sora, which again, I can't say just how bad that product is truly. Because it does not create anything that you're looking for it to create outside of like one time out of 10, you might get something close.
Right.
You compare that to what Google has done with their video generation thing. Why is Google's 1,000 times better than Sora's? It's because they have access to a ginormous amount of data from YouTube, right? And YouTube, what percentage of the videos on YouTube are real world physics scenarios where you can see how humans walk, how balls drop, how cars drive, how horses run, right? Yeah, they have all that data. What's interesting about the Tesla equation, it's limited, right? But you do have a, I don't know how much data of the real world, the actual real world out there. People walking, cars driving, people, I don't know, like, but it is limited. It's very cute. And then on top of that, you layer on the human or robot on top of that. So what's the human or robot video feed going to look like? It's going to be vastly different than the video feed from the car, from the cars, right? What value does that bring to XAI? And how does Grok get better from that?
Also, the robot is only as strong as the mind of the robot. And I have a friend who invested $1 million into XAI. He got early access into the June fundraising.
Good for him.
Not the recent one. Yeah, so he basically doubled in like 5 months. But he told me his thesis was very simple. He was like, well, Optimus needs a brain. And Grok is going to be the brain. XAI is powering Grok. And Grok might be one of the best brains because it's powered by all the real-time data. So you could literally ask Optimus, you know, what's happening in the stock market today, and it can filter through all the tweets because it's basically Grok. And then, like, it just seems... And then Jensen doubles down on it at CES, saying that the ChatGPT moment for humanoid robots is around the corner. Maybe that's a year, maybe that's 6 months, maybe that's 2 years. But if it's coming, what is the one public equity that gives anyone exposure to it? It has to be Tesla.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
Yeah. I mean, Tesla and Elon and Jensen are basically best pals at this point because they're both like just feeding each other's businesses, you know. Elon saying, "Hey Jensen, like let's go build a million GPU cluster out in Tennessee." You know, that sets the bar. Now everyone has to chase XAI and they've got a wine and dine Jensen to get their allocations, and he's going to split it up between everybody else, and they're all going to be playing second fiddle. And so, you know, Elon is basically like funding Jensen's growth for the next 5 years. But then on the flip side, even, and then obviously, you know, Jensen being willing to give Elon those, that first allocation, like he kind of had to get a second allocation, I think, of the H100s, but I think on the H200s, he's first in line. And on the Blackwells, he's definitely going to be first in line. Like there's no one who's going to get Blackwells before Elon. And, you know, so why would Jensen do that? Well, just because of what I said, like Elon's setting the bar. And so now everyone's going to chase him. And then if you factor in the thing that's crazy is, okay, he's going to get the first allocation, because Jensen wants him to set that bar high, but then he's going to get that thing up and running in a fifth, maybe an eighth of this amount of time that the next best person is going to get it. So the second place is going to get their allocation of these GPUs after Elon. He's probably already going to have his cluster up and running when they take delivery. And then they're still going to take 8 months or a year just to get their cluster online, just to get started. Like it's going to be, so, you know, that's one of the other advantages that XAI has, is they're just going to be rolling in like the most GPU, like operational GPU capacity of anyone. And I think this is another opportunity for Tesla. And this isn't even my idea. I'm going to shout out Brian Wang here, but like, I think that XAI is going to be discarding GPU capacity faster than almost any other player is going to be bringing it online. And that is a massive opportunity for Tesla to, you know, buy up training capacity at basically pennies on the dollar through an investment into XAI. And that's just completely independently of licensing Grok into the cars or anything else. Like the opportunity in the surface area for deep, you know, mutually beneficial partnerships in this this business are incredible. And you know, I have people have challenged me and said, well, you know, what's the benefit to Tesla? Why should Tesla invest in XAI? What do we as Tesla shareholders get out of it? And I would point them back and say that if you don't believe that Elon can work out a mutually beneficial arrangement, then like just think about how SpaceX and Tesla already get so much mutual benefit by sharing engineers back and forth that are able to, you know, solve incredible problems that, you know, if you didn't have access to SpaceX's material science engineers at Tesla, could you solve the gigacastings at that level?
Right.
Probably not. And, you know, he has the ability to create these synergies between just these incredibly smart people.
Yeah. I think for me, it's even simpler than that. XAI has a lot of compute for AI. Tesla is an AI company. Therefore, there's something there. just bring them together. And the guy heads both. To your point, he'll figure it out. Right? He'll figure it out. I think that the overarching premise here, and I wonder if you agree with this, Amit, I think, you know, I mean, Jensen pointed at this on his discussion, like there is so much coming down the pike in relation to artificial intelligence when it comes to like this embodied AI, right? It's like AI in a physical object that operates in the physical world that will generate profits in some way through the services that physical product can provide. To me, it seems like Tesla is by far the best positioned company to take advantage of this, I wouldn't even call it trend, this market shift, this industrial shift, this sort of like revolution in how we interface with the real world. I don't see any other company that's remotely close to Tesla, okay? From a car perspective, moving people from point A to point B, with the cheapest cost per mile, with the cyber cab, which has a manufacturing cost that's potentially 20,000 or less per unit, and you have all the technology necessary to power the self-driving already built into the business. You have all the capex already. You're already depreciating all that shit and amortizing all everything that you've put towards that AI effort in the from a standpoint of training, compute, data collection, right? You've used your existing fleet to power that, right? So now you're going to have the cheapest cost per mile solution from point A to point B, which is really a embodied AI solution. It's a physical object using artificial intelligence to move people from point A to point B, and Tesla will make profit for that. And then the human or robot is an additional layer on top of that, which is physical labor. I don't know any other company that is positioned nearly as well as Tesla is. And I don't know, have you been able to find anybody that's remotely close? Like, to me, this feels like a total and utter monopoly in its current state.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think that was one of the best explanations I've heard of like the ETF that is Tesla, of all the different businesses inside of it, and the monopolistic power that it holds. I mean, you've got Google with Waymo, and you got other humanoid robotic startups, but that's not the all-encompassing package that is Tesla, which has a history of executing. And yes, sometimes those promises are a little bit late, but nonetheless, they do get the job done. And when it comes to finding another company that can do that and has a leader that is able to get the 100,000 GPU cluster built in a month, it's hard, dude. And the problem is the stock has run up so damn much. So I think, you know, the volatility in the stock is what's causing people some pain right now. But that's just the nature of it going from 100 to basically 480, right? Call it 500 in the past year. And so I don't know. And every time I try to have a valuation discussion on Tesla, I come back to the question of, okay, the PE is this, the price of sales is this. But if you just rewind what Farzad said for 30 seconds, what other company can do this? And like, why am I looking at price to earnings on something like this? Like, yes, maybe certain times the stock gets extended, stuff like that, but it's their world and we're living in it. And the next 10, I mean, how many more hints do we need from Jensen about how these verticals are becoming multi-trillion-dollar opportunities? And there's one company that's out there that's taking advantage of it, which is why it's really funny to see all the analysts start to upgrade it, because either two things are happening. Either A, they may be chasing the price, which is probably true, or B, even they're acknowledging they can't deny it. Maybe the stock is going to tumble here and there, but they can't deny what you just said, which is why they're slapping a high price target on it. And eventually it'll get there, and they know it'll get there, so they'll sound right, but they can't leave the $220 price target or $150 price target anymore.
Can we just highlight how, like, What are these analysts doing then? What exactly is their job, for real? If you call yourself a Wall Street analyst, what are you doing? Like, if this is your approach, what are you doing?
I have asked myself this question many times, because there are some analysts that are actually really good and they can appropriately raise the price before the price skyrockets.
Shout out Dan Ives, my Penn State brother.
Dan Ives, right? And it's so funny because Dan Ives is not staring at an Excel sheet all day. Like, he's looking at what's happening at the company, where the future is going, and then making a prediction based on where he thinks the fundamentals can match in terms of the valuation, and then attaching a premium on that if it's a really good company. A lot of these other analysts are stuck looking at Excel sheets and they're trying to come up with a number. And that number is, it's really disheartening, because the analysts issue a note and that note goes to their clients. Their clients pay sometimes $1,000 a page for their notes. So very expensive research. And then if the research is don't buy because we're scared about this esoteric thing, and then the stock goes to the moon, a lot of those clients are like, what were you doing? Like, what were your numbers coming from in terms of a projection to come to this analysis? And so it's funny when Craig Irwin, who is the longtime Tesla bear, went from 80 to 350. Like, you can't go from 80 to 350 overnight. There's no way in hell that happens unless you're chasing the price. And if you're chasing the price, you're not actually analyzing the company. You're just chasing the price.
Yeah. Amazing. You would think that Wall Street learns from its mistakes. Like, when I think of Wall Street, what do I think? Well, I mean, this is what I used to think when I was a wee young lad that didn't know much about anything. Like, wow, these guys are so rich and they're so good at what they do because they're on Wall Street. They understand everything. They're so smart. They can understand all the things because they have all the tools and they have way more information than I do. And their brains are way bigger because they went to Ivy League schools. And oh my God, they get to do this 24/7. And the more I dig into it, these motherfuckers don't know what the fuck they're doing. They don't. When it comes to world-changing technology, when it comes to understanding a company down to its like nuts and bolts and how it's changing the world, these people have no fucking idea what they're looking at. This is my overall conclusion, right? And nothing has happened in the past 5, 10, 20 years with the advent of the internet, with the advent of artificial intelligence, from where I sit, for any of these people to recognize what this company is doing. Like, Tesla retail can't be right for the last 12 years straight and then call it luck. You just can't. You can't have that. You can't have an idiot like me on the internet calling this story correctly for the last 10, 20, 12 years, a bunch of other idiots that are way smarter than I am, and YouTube land and forum land on X land calling this story properly for the last 10, 12 years, and then say that's somehow luck. Wall Street should have done that every single time. Every single time, right? And what this, I don't know why I got so mad. Let me finish this thought real quick. The conversation we had with Chris Camillo, or Larry Goldberg had with Chris Camillo on our channel with the Maverick Mind, he made a very poignant sort of point on this, a very specific point where he said, this is why retail will always have an advantage over Wall Street. It's because of exactly what you described. Is retail is not stuck in this preconceived notion of like, this is how we value companies. We're trying to de-risk looking like an idiot. We can't price too far into the future. We have to be risk averse. We have to be conservative, so on and so forth. And every single time that leads to them missing the boat on everything. They missed Nvidia, they missed Palantir, they missed Tesla, so on and so forth. Just go down the list. How many misses are there? Apple, back in the day with Steve Jobs specifically, right? Wall Street is not designed to understand innovation. So where am I going with this whole thing? In the age of artificial intelligence, you have nothing
but
destruction.
Don't listen to analysts.
Yeah, don't listen to analysts. I don't know. Don't listen to me either, or Hans, or Amit. Do your own research, right?
I would agree, dude. If you're going to listen to an analyst, I mean, they're so like Robinhood's another company I cover as well, and they have like, I think, 20 analysts. And it's funny because like at $6 or $7, no one thought this thing could get to 20 or 30 or 40. And now everyone's like, well, it's going to go to 55. And it's like, I get that they've seen the growth and it's like, it's been a show me, not a tell me story. And like they now they're able to conceptualize the numbers, but like the benefit to clients is not getting in at 40 and then getting out at 50. That's a good gain. The benefit should be getting in at 6 and getting out at 50. That's an astronomical gain. And I've just accepted a lot of these analysts have a very hard time being able to see that far into the future. And it's just the nature of how they are and how they analyze.
I loved Chris's points there in that conversation you referenced, Farzad, because he said it really boils down to two things. A, the biggest reason is that analysts don't make, or not necessarily analysts, but Wall Street hedge funds in general, and just like the game on Wall Street is not picking a winner and making a big gain on like an investment that goes big. They make their money by managing lots of other people's capital and then charging a fee based on assets under management. And so they don't care how the actual investments perform. They just want more assets under management because then they make a lot more money in fees. So the incentives aren't aligned. That's number one. And then number two, it's just like CYA everywhere. Everyone is all about not doing something wrong, and in their desire not to do something wrong, they never do it right. So it, like, those two things are just the dominant forces that shape how, you know, 90-95% of Wall Street analysts approach what it is that they do. And this is why, you know, usually their predictions are no better than a coin toss. Like, there are very few of them who actually have a consistent track record of good picks.
Yep. And if I'm going to pick on my very good friend Gary Black for a second here, so like what this conversation reminds me of the back and forths I have with him on X, which I love, and I really appreciate Gary for being willing to have those conversations with me. But that's the kind of mentality that I run into constantly. It's like I'm trying to convey from my standpoint how this entire self-driving discussion with Tesla, given what we just talked about, given the fact they have a car they're going to be able to manufacture under $20,000 per unit, they have all the AI costs essentially built into the business already. They don't have any real incremental costs associated to getting AI to be unsupervised. I mean, over time they will, but it's going to be spread out through the entire business. And so you're going to have a car that's going to be able to do pennies on the mile, A to B transportation, where Tesla owns the entire vertical stack, right? And I'm trying to tell him, Gary, what the hell does Uber and Lyft, what purpose do they serve in a world where a company like Tesla owns the entire vertical stack of manufacturing the vehicle, having being able to drive itself at $20,000 to $25,000 per unit all in, and then they own the app and they can disseminate information about how much cheaper the rides will be versus an Uber on platforms like X, which will hit tens of millions of people in the United States. And they can just be like, hey, by the way, did you know that Tesla has released their self-driving hailing service in Austin, Texas? You can go to the airport for, $10 instead of Uber, which will cost $25. Oh, and by the way, you have the car to yourself. You can be in a very comfortable car. You can play your own music. You can put the AC at 1 degree if you want to, and you want to wear your coat or whatever. You can do whatever you want in this thing, and it's way cheaper. And it's like, okay, what purpose does Uber serve in that world, right? That kind of conversation I'm trying to have. And it's like, well, you know, Uber's got all these AUMs and they have a huge reach and blah, blah, blah. And it reminds me of that mentality. It's like it's a fundamental inability to look at the story for what it is and asking the questions from a root cause perspective, which is, when you have a company that can offer a service at pennies on the dollar, what purpose does a competitor have when they cannot do that? Because they employ drivers, because they have to pay drivers, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing about Gary that's interesting is because I think when the stock went to 140 or something, Gary had this famous tweet about we were right about blah blah blah. We were right about blah blah blah. You remember that? We were right.
Yeah.
It's like
a
victory lap of victory laps.
Yeah.
And it's like just bragging that we were right about Elon being political, yada yada.
Yeah.
And then Tesla goes up and he's like, well, our price target was always 380. And I'm like, okay, so this is just a game of like collecting hedge fund fees now or whatever, like, or money management fees. This is not an actual thesis, because you wouldn't be claiming we were right. You would be buying the fuck out of the dip at 140.
Yep.
Because you think like this is going to the moon.
Yep.
And then you would have 20-30% CAGR on your fund instead of 3.
Yes. That's I love Gary as well, but why is this guy this might be a little nitpicky, but you know, he has this like subscribers thing on Twitter, right? Where he's charging people to like read his posts. And I'm like, I don't understand why any guy managing this much money cares about getting a couple dollars from people on Twitter. Like, you should be making so much money off hedge fund fees or money management fees. You should just want to get more followers, because the more followers you have, like, the more people might invest in your fund, right? Versus like people subscribing to your market news. And maybe it's nitpicky, but I've always felt a little weird when people of that stature are charging for a couple dollars a month from average people, when in reality, they should want their ideas to get as much distribution as possible, which means you don't paywall anything, because that means more people can then invest in your fund. They can call you up and say, hey, can you manage a couple $1 million of my own? So when you do something like that, and it's so counterintuitive, like Cathie Wood's not charging you a dollar for accessing her tweet. She's, everything she trades every day is publicly available. Why? Because the more people know Cathie Wood, the more people invest in ARK. That is the like framework for like establishing a fund. When you're taking victory laps at the bottom and then charging people to access your commentary, it's always been very weird how he goes about this. And I have a lot of respect, but it's weird.
Yeah. And if Gary's listening to this, I think this is very good advice, because I think the approach from top to bottom is old school. And, you know, it's like when I think of Wall Street, it's old school. And so that approach of like, hey, you know, pay a subscriber fee to learn about my, you know, more power to him if he wants to do that. But you're 100% right. In this day and age of like free and open information, right? Like
it's capitalism. I want him to make as much money as possible. Yeah. I'm just saying, isn't the more money in people investing in, what's it called, Future Fund versus paying $2 to hear your thoughts?
Shout out FFND.
I never understood it ever. I was always so confused by this.
Yeah.
And the only reason I'm calling him out here is because he calls out everybody in the world when, you know, they make one little mistake and he wants to take victory lap. Yeah. So a lot of love for him. I think he's added a lot of value to the Tesla community from understanding Wall Street's perspective. But then he acts in the same way that Wall Street acts, which is so weird, because Wall Street has never really been bullish on Tesla. So why is he acting like he's been bullish on Tesla? Because he really hasn't.
I like his fighting spirit, but I think the challenge, and again, this is like a Wall Street issue. The challenge is like that fighting spirit fundamentally misses what is happening. Yeah. Like you're pointing the energy at stuff that doesn't matter. It just doesn't like his whole thing about like, I'm so moved on from this advertisement debate, by the way, where I was like, I was anti-advertisement, then I kind of got on the advertisement boat. And then I started seeing the advertising stuff start to bubble up again. Oh, Tesla would have had a better Q4 if we had more, more visibility. I'm like, you guys, just get unsupervised self-driving. Just get unsupervised self-driving. That's all you gotta do.
This was a tirade he went on, right? This whole idea of advertising. Dude, Tesla, I didn't buy a Tesla because of a Facebook ad. I bought Tesla because they had 0% APR. That's it. I mean, like, maybe they, and then I used it and it was amazing. Like, no ad would have and I'm not saying advertising is bad, but to say the stock.
Wait, so getting the price as low as possible is the thing that got you to buy the car?
I'm definitely
shocker.
That helps.
No way.
Because like, who the hell is really buying a car off seeing an ad? Maybe someone who has no idea what Tesla is, sure. But most people know what the hell Tesla is. They just need a little nudging. And when interest rates are high and you give 0% APR and 30 days free of FSC, that's enough of a nudge. And that requires no type of advertising, you know, to me.
Yeah. And then the underlying feature set of, you don't have to pay attention when the car drives you around. There's no one that can offer that value prop. There's no one on earth that can say, hey, I mean, Mercedes, if you're on a highway and there's traffic and it's under 45 miles an hour and it's sunny and blah, blah, blah. Like, they have all these like limitations, but no other car company can say, anywhere you are. And again, Tesla doesn't have this right now, but it's very obvious that they will very soon. No other company can say, yo, just buy our car. You don't have to pay attention. And it's cheaper. And it's going to be cheaper than mile than most anything else you can buy. What's up? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think it's amazing that Gary. So I actually, he blocked me. So I'm free to take shots at him on.
Why did he block you? What could you have possibly said?
I pointed out a while ago that his, you know, returns. You know, he was making a dig at Tesla, and I was like, yes, everyone should take Gary's advice, because he knows exactly when to trade, you know, buy and sell Tesla to maximize your returns.
Oh, but wait. How can someone block you off sharing returns of their public portfolio?
Yeah.
Unless you like called him a dick, but I don't think you said anything disrespectful.
I don't think so.
All right, let's move on from this. Let's shit on Gary tirade.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to say is that I love that he, and this is where I'm going with why I specifically took a dig at him. I love that he watched the whole Jensen presentation, and he came away from that thinking, "Oh my gosh, Tesla's so screwed."
When,
if you listen to what Jensen said, and then especially the follow-up, you know, because people were so dumb, he had to go and like say it specifically on a Bloomberg interview. Jensen said Elon is leading the world in the most important areas, and we as NVIDIA are trying to help all these laggards who suck ass at AI by giving them access to some of the tools that Elon is using to kick everyone's ass.
So Gary actually said that. Gary actually said that? Like he said that in.
He had a post saying that, you know, I've said that competition is going to come, and that when Tesla solves self-driving, that, you know, they're going to have a maximum of 20% market penetration, and they're not going to be able to charge more than this
right now.
Because he thinks that NVIDIA is going to be like this get out of jail free card for all the legacy OEMs who suck ass at AI. It's like, how could you get that any more bass ackwards from reality? And the reason that I love that this is his take is because he does somewhat represent Wall Street, and this is Wall Street's take on this. And so for those of us who realize how stupid that take is, this is a massive opportunity for retail investors to take advantage of literal morons and take their money from them.
So can you pull that back up again? Real quick, because here's I'm gonna do some lawyer speak here. I'm gonna try to defend Gary a little bit here, okay? Because he's my boy, even though we disagree on literally everything. Let's go ahead and pull this up, okay? So in response to Jensen Huang last night at CES, we're working with just about every major car company around the world, Waymo and Zoox and Tesla, of course, in their data center, and BYD, the largest EV company in the world. JLR's got a really cool car coming, blah blah blah. Mercedes has a fleet of cars coming with NVIDIA starting this year, going to production. And I'm super, super, super excited, pleased to announce that today Toyota and NVIDIA are going to partner together to create their next generation of autonomous vehicles. And then Gary says, as I've said for many years, Tesla won't be the only automaker with fully autonomous electric vehicles. Tesla is clearly the market leader today with its generalized and scalable approach, which is a weird change up from what he used to say. Because he said, you know, Tesla needs LiDAR and all that stuff, but we'll set that aside. But with NVIDIA providing synthetic AI-generated driving data to any OEM willing to partner with NVIDIA, others will get there too, and valuation models assuming Tesla with winner-take-all markets share are unrealistic. Okay, so if I take that last sentence and I say, assuming Tesla with winner-take-all market share are unrealistic, I agree with that, but I don't think it's unrealistic to think that Tesla will have somewhere between 20 to 50% market share. In the long term, 20 to 50 years down the road. If it comes to like the next 10 to 20, like the next 10 years, it is extremely obvious that the only company that can do this at scale is Tesla.
Yeah.
And who's to say, right? And then what happens if it's more economical for other car companies to say, you know what, instead of doing our thing with NVIDIA, I'm just gonna license FSD. I'm just gonna license FSD, right? At that point, you do get to a market take all situation, specifically probably in regions outside of China, because I think China is going to have like different things. So maybe from that perspective, it's thinking, well, China's going to have their own thing. You can't just assume 100%, you know, winner take all globally. Okay, great. But what about in the US? What about in Europe? What about in South America? What about in Africa? So on and so forth, right? Just to give a little bit of nuance there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But the thing is that Gary is also massively underestimating the TAM of how big that market is. So in his model, we can, like, even if we say 20% or, you know, 100% penetration of whatever he sets the TAM at, like Tesla's going to be more than that, because the TAM is going to be 10 times, 100 times whatever he's estimating. And even if they only have 20 to 50%, it's still way more valuable than he is putting out there. Yeah, I don't know. It's just fun to see, like, because these people are stuck in the future is going to look like, you know, some variation of the past. And that's not how disruption works. Like, when you're massively driving down costs, the entire world changes. Like when you take a product and you cut the cost by 90% and then again by another 90% and it's 1/100th of what it cost originally. Like you live in a new world. It's not the same. And we're in the process of watching this right now with space travel. But the same type of dynamic is going to be playing out in transportation with the cost of moving from point A to point B is going to just get absolutely crushed in the next couple of decades. And transportation is a huge part of the cost of literally everything you buy. And
the $9 trillion market, by the way, globally today.
Yeah. The implications are just, you know, staggering. And, you know, Wall Street analysts want to play around with, oh, well, you know, EV share, you know, is going to only be this much. And then Tesla's only going to be this much of the EV share and blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay, like, fine, you know, value the 10-year DCF on that basis. Let's see, let's put your performance up against mine and see who wins.
Has Tesla said they want to license FSD one day to the OEMs?
Oh yeah, 100%.
So wouldn't it be better? Repeatedly. So wouldn't it make sense for the OEMs to license real world data over whatever synthetic stuff NVIDIA is coming up with?
Yep.
Because when I was watching the presentation, I was like, okay, so they're making synthetic, they're doing all this work to try to figure out what a stop sign looks like. I'm like, but Tesla has 70 billion miles of all this. Like, so yeah. I guess. Do you think then Toyota doesn't want to work with Tesla? Is that the problem?
I think so. Yeah, I think there's a weird. Again, this is legacy auto we're talking about. Legacy auto is, which is a fascinating topic that the online guys talked about when they were making the predictions for the year, where they predicted the beginning of the end for legacy automakers, the collapse of mm-hmm. legacy auto, which is something that we've talked about repeatedly on this channel for God knows how long.
Honda, Nissan coming to, I mean,
yeah,
it's happening here.
Huge signal, right? So you're talking about an industry that's about as incompetently, it's about as incompetent as it gets when it comes to understanding where the future trends are because of how large they are and because of how the culture of those companies are not conducive to fast change when a disruption comes along. They are the poster child for the innovator's dilemma. They cannot change. And so I think from NVIDIA's perspective, right, it, for whatever reason, they can't change. And I think from Toyota's perspective, they're like, okay, should we partner with our competitor or should we partner with a supplier?
Right.
Right. And I think that's the idiotic MBA math that they're coming up with. It's like, well, if we partner with our competitor is going to get money from us and then we're going to help them in some way. So we can't, you know, we can't do that. So we have to go with a supplier because they're going to be able to give us a tool that we'll be able to do what Tesla does. And then these morons are not asking the question of like, okay, but do you actually have the data that you need, you idiots? Are you going to be able to put this on all the cars that you're manufacturing quickly and be able to gather the data and understand how to process the data, how to churn it through a fucking a training compute and putting it on an inference chip and being efficient with it and having a chip that's super efficient so it's not draining your battery and being able to put this on your own app and operate that app, so on and so forth, come up with the different models that you need to run this profitably, so on and so forth, right?
Are you going to be able to hire the AI engineers out of Silicon Valley that literally hate your company and think you're a retard to come to your company and actually make all this NVIDIA tool, like produce the thing that you want it to have? Like, it's, you know, just two completely different worlds. NVIDIA is going to sell you a bunch of tools that you can use to create your own artificial intelligence vehicle driving model. Or you could just go to Tesla and say, hey, Tesla, may I please license your already working artificial intelligence vehicle driver?
Yeah. What's going to happen is going to be very similar to the NACS discussion, the NACS, the North American Charging Standard port that Tesla manufactured. What happened? Right. Nobody did it for the longest time. And then when it became idiotically obvious that everyone should be on Tesla supercharger network, Ford's like, okay, fine. Props to Jim Farley for this. Again, I think from a legacy standpoint, he's still the best. He's one of the goats when it comes to at least trying to push their company forward. He's like, okay, Nax, we need the supercharger network. And then literally everyone else in the span of like, what, 3 months, they were like, oh, yeah, we need to do that. Yeah, we need to do that, right? Because they understood, like, hey, if Ford can sell EVs that it can tap into the Tesla charging network, by default, their cars are completely and utterly obsolete versus that legacy automaker. Because they don't view Tesla as real competition. They view Ford as real competition, right? I don't know if that's still the case or not. And so the FSD equation is going to be exactly the same. They're going to go down the path of trying to do their own stupid solution. It's going to fail over and over again. It's going to be, they're going to outsource it to suppliers or to third parties, and it's going to get clunky. It's going to be very slow. They're going to have to manage morons to try to get this thing going. And then they're going to realize, oh shit, okay, so Tesla is doing unsupervised self-driving everywhere, and we're not able to do it, and it's been 4 years, so we should probably go with Tesla. And then one player is going to be like, okay, we're licensing FSD, and everyone's going to be like, okay, yeah, we as well. That's what's going to happen. It's obvious that's what's going to happen. You know, the question becomes, are they going to be around for that to happen?
Yeah, and I agree, because it was really weird seeing the NVIDIA-Toyota partnership, because I'm like, okay, that's cool. But I'm like, it feels like Toyota's stretching to not work with Tesla, you know, or to not actually use the real world. I'm like, this is cars, this is life or death. Like, we need some real world data here. Synthetic stuff is cool, but, yeah. And it's probably be a great business for NVIDIA, but it definitely showed you the divides that legacy auto has with Tesla.
Yeah. They don't understand the technology at its core. They don't understand that it's a data problem. This is why XAI has a leg up on OpenAI. This is why Tesla has a leg up on everybody else. It's a data problem. It's a data collection problem. It's not necessarily, I mean, of course, the training and the inference is a very, you obviously need that, but that's not the core. If you don't have the data to feed to those systems, you're not going to get self-driving. You're just not going to get it.
The only reason Reddit's up 400% is because they have really good crowdsourced data that's exclusive to Reddit and that they can license to these LLMs. So I agree, dude. I don't know where the hell OpenAI is going to get more data to train their models, but Tesla has all the data when it comes to training FSD.
The more time passes, the more I'm like, and this is a quick pivot, the more I'm like, OpenAI is so screwed. They're so done. They are so done. They are so done. No, like, all their talent left. They have no exclusive data rights to anything, right? Their competitors are catching up rapidly. Just look at what happened with Sora and Google solution. Their biggest competitor in Elon has first dibs on all of NVIDIA's hardware, and the talent that they have will get that up and running way faster than anybody at OpenAI can do it. Like, okay, so just fast forward this long enough, and it's like the outcome is obvious. OpenAI, here's the crazy thing. OpenAI is Toyota already.
The thing about OpenAI that I still use ChatGPT more than anything, because the model is just better than the rest of them. My question is, when does that change?
Right? Grok 3.
Maybe. Because I'm with GPT had an outage the other day, and Sam Altman had to tweet that, like, yeah, he's getting, you know, there's so many people are like, yo, where is it? Like, we're missing. So obviously they have a product that people want to use, and that's growing. The question is, when do people find an alternative that's easy enough for them to be like, I don't see the difference? And then, yeah, I'm like, all right, where is the moat at that point?
I mean, I don't know if it actually is Grok 3. I certainly hope so. But I think it's like guaranteed by the end of 25 that it's not even just going to be one. There's going to be several.
It's a matter of time. Yeah, it goes back to the data discussion. It's like the data is a separator. The compute's going to get commoditized. It's going to just not matter that much, you know? It's such a fascinating discussion. And I agree with you. Like, I do use ChatGPT myself. You know, I think O1 Pro is a unique solution that is good at what it does. It really is. But it's like, okay, but that's just that you're just letting the hardware go for longer. You're just letting it think longer. So it's like, so who's gonna be able to do that better? It's a company with more hardware, right? And so, and the companies that have the hoard of talent will be able to make that hardware work better over time. So, I could be 100% wrong. I could be 100% wrong, but I don't know.
I mean, I go back to the the Phil Graham, you know, quote about Sam, that Sam is you if you leave Sam on a deserted island, you know, with a tribe of cannibals, and you come back a couple years later, Sam will be running the place. You know, that's a great way to survive. That's not a great way to build companies over the long term. That works for a little while, and then it doesn't.
Yeah. And listen, the guy's obviously brilliant. He's obviously a brilliant mind. Super, super obvious. It's just, I don't remember if I made this point before, but like, to me, like, isn't an ego thing to want to compete with Elon? Because to me, it's like, why? If I had the resources and the brain, I'd be like, I'm just not going to get into anything Elon gets into. I'm not going to try to go head up with the guy. I'm not going to try to like go for market dominance. I might like try to build adjacent to Elon to try and figure out like, okay, so he's creating this like extremely cheap point A to point B transportation system. What are the industries that will pop up around it because of that breakthrough? That's where I'll look. But if I'm trying to go heads up with the guy, you know, but the OpenAI story is so fascinating. It's because like the reason why we're here, it's because they used to work together. And then Elon's like, fuck you, I'm going to do my own thing. And so what's Sam going to do? Close up shop? Okay, bye. Of course not. He's not going to do that. You know, so it's almost like I almost feel bad for him in a way, because it's like he's almost like, regardless of how that entire thing fell out, if it was a Sam thing or an Elon thing, it doesn't matter. He is stuck between a rock and a hard place, trying to compete in a space that will be insanely disrupted by the person that's able to collect all the talent and the capital, who happens to be one of the most, if not the most brilliant engineer we have on this planet. That's just the facts. Them's are the facts.
Yeah, and the other thing that's really interesting about it as well is like Anthropic is raising, right, $2 billion at a $60 billion valuation. So the money's pouring in to the foundation model companies. In 5 years, I don't know how many are going to be left standing that are actually providing value. Maybe their valuations are higher than where they are today, but which ones are really working? And then which ones are making a profit? Because GPUs are expensive.
Yeah, 100%. How long do we have you for, Amit? We're almost at an hour here.
I'm however long you need.
You're good. Yep. Can we talk politics for a little bit?
Sure. Let's talk politics.
Are we going to get you in hot water if we do?
Let's do it.
You get yourself in trouble?
We'll see.
We'll find out. So what's your take?
YOLO.
What's your take on the Trump admin that's about to take over here in about 12 days? Just overarching thoughts.
I think people voted for Trump because they were tired of political correctness. I think uniquely in America, the idea that we cared so much about pronouns over people's grocery bills was a mistake that the Democrats focused on. And Trump went a different route. A, he focused on the problems that Americans cared about over the eggshells they were afraid to walk on in terms of what they would say politically or just in regular discussions they would have with their friends. You say one bad thing, you're somehow a racist, sexist, homophobic person. So I think Trump focused on the actual issues. Number two, Trump went the new media route. And we all know this very uniquely because we are new media. And I mean, you could argue Theo Vaughn and Joe Rogan got him elected, not literally, but because he actually had distribution to an audience of people that were willing to listen to him versus going through CBS or CNN or Fox. So I think that's why Trump won. In terms of what it's going to look like politically, the problem is the market's at all-time highs. We just had 2 years of compounding 25% returns on the S&P. For an administration to take over that market, when there's actual main problems on regular people's lives, inflation, interest rates, et cetera, but the markets are at all-time highs, I think there's a little bit of divergence there. And I'm curious how Trump resolves that. In January 2017, Trump said the dollar was too high. And then he did what he had to do to get the dollar to come back down and for the market to kind of stabilize. Right now, the dollar is as high as it's been since 2022, when inflation was like 10%, and interest rates are pretty high. And yesterday, Trump in his speech at Mar-a-Lago said that he thinks rates are too high. So what is the tension going to be with Trump and Jay Powell? How is Trump actually going to get his agenda passed? Is he going to get the House of Representatives and the Senate, which he has control over in terms of the Republican Party, to actually agree? I mean, the fact that Speaker Johnson didn't even get the first vote because they had to like we knew the Republicans were eventually going to vote for him as speaker, but they had, but like it's this political charades that they have to play. Is a Bitcoin reserve actually going to get passed if you can't get a couple people to agree with it? I think these are the questions looming the administration in general. I do think we're in a new world. It's a new America. People are not going to be that afraid to say what they think. Billionaires are not controlling the White House. They are influencing how the White House thinks about technology and business, because guess what? They're fucking billionaires. Maybe they know a little bit about technology and business. And I think that's going to result hopefully in more growth policies. But I think there's a lot of unknowns over the next 4 years.
So I'm curious for your read on people in general. I mean, it's been like extremely obvious that people like George Soros were essentially in de facto control of the Democratic Party for a while. So it seems strange to me that now people are complaining about billionaire influence in politics when, like, this is how the game is played. And like you hear people talking, complaining about George Soros a little bit, but it's, like basically background noise for the last several decades. But now that the political winds are shifting and Elon is the billionaire who's exerting some influence on the political process, like all of a sudden, billionaires are the end of the world. What is that? And why do people think that way? Or, what's your read on all the rhetoric around that?
It's really weird, because it's like, you're 1,000% correct. Bill Gates, George Soros, these guys control, I mean, MSNBC, the M stands for fucking Microsoft. I never knew that. I didn't know that. I was like, what? This? So it's these guys have had so much influence, so much control on how people think to get their agenda passed. Like, it's funny, because when I do my market open and market close streams, this has been my take on this. My take has always been, this is how the game is played. Vlad Tenev of Robinhood gave Trump $2 million. Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, et cetera, they're all giving them million. I'm like, this is how the game is played. And people are like, yeah, but Amit, don't you think that's like weird that billionaires are influencing? I'm like, in life, it's about money and power comes from those who have money. And if you don't like that, go get the money. And if you don't want to get the money, sit back and watch other people get the money, get their agenda passed, and you can sit on your ass and not try to get the money. But I want to try to have power, which means I want to try to go get the money. And so Elon has the money. Because
Chamath is strong with you, Amit. I can hear him.
Chamath and I.
That's racist.
No, but Chamath, that talk you gave in 2017.
It's the quote. Yeah, get the fucking money.
It's exactly the quote. I even referenced that on the stream I did the other day when I was talking about this. That quote changed my life, because like it's pretty damn obvious. This is a guy who's a immigrant, came to America, had nothing, and he realized, oh, to get power, you need money. And I don't agree with Chamath and everything. I mean, he's done some really weird stuff. But like, if you have the money, you have the power, and then you can move forward. So Elon basically has the power because he has the money, because he's built the companies. Now he's actually exerting some of that money or some of that power via political speech, aka buying Twitter, and then actually magnifying things that need to be talked about. Like in the UK, certain ethnic groups are doing things and we can't talk about them for certain reasons. And he's just like, fuck this. This is ridiculous. Like, we should talk about it. I am really scared about what I've seen videos of the cops coming to someone's house in the UK and arresting them for a retweet. That shit is scary, bro. Because all of us are content creators and we know, like, we just fuck around. Farzad, the crazy jokes on Twitter, right? Like, can you imagine? he's in his nice home.
What are you talking about?
The Texas sheriff pulls up. It's like, Farzad, you are arrested for tweeting about masturbation or something.
A Texas sheriff will arrest me for speech, bro. This is Texas. What are you talking about? If I was in California, I'd be more concerned.
It is very
the Texas scary. Sheriff would find himself shot, tarred, and feathered.
Yeah, and I know what you're saying though.
Yeah. And the thing is, Elon's just trying to say, hey, this doesn't seem right. And that's it. He's just trying to say, hey, this doesn't seem right. And I don't know where we are going to be in the next 5 years, because I think most people agree, yeah, that's not right. But then again, when I say most people think that's not right, do most people think that's not right? Because you ask some Democrats in the United States or like some far hardcore leftists, they're like, no, you should have consequences if you retweet something that's racist.
I think those people are in the minority. I truly think so. So let me give you some like statistics and data that back this up. So on the YouTube channel, okay, when I started getting into politics and I started discussing politics, okay, And I specifically attacked left-leaning policies around speech. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, there goes the channel. Fuck it. It's zero views, right? So what ended up happening? The like ratio went down 5%. 5%. It went from like a 96% to a 91%, a 97% to a 92%, whatever that was. Okay. And the views were either the same or bigger. I'm like, huh. Okay. And I just, and we kept looking at that data. It kept coming through. So what did that tell me? By far, the, at least for the last 10, 20 years, let's say, the discourse online or specifically in legacy media that was amplified was the minority discussion.
Yeah.
It was not reflective of how the masses think. And what I'm coming to find out is that the masses are insanely underrated when it comes to their ability to have nuance and understanding and a core want for freedom. For just freedom. Just, I want to be able to pursue what I want to pursue. I want to be able to say what I want to, what I want to be able to say without fear of being persecuted. And it doesn't really matter what country, what race, what creed, what sexuality you have. These are very basic human needs, right? It's the ability to get your ideas across without fear of persecution and the ability to chase your dream without fear of being stonewalled for no reason. And that's why America is so fucking awesome. If you look at what America has done in the last few months, and I posted about this on X, it has shed its Orwellian trend, which is what you talked about, right? You talked about, like, it's scary to see UK going down this path. Bro, like we've shed that trend. We just needed a few very brave people that had power to start the discussion. And then the masses were like, yo, yes, let's fucking go. And we had a place in X specifically that started the trend of having those discussions. Holy fuck, look at what Zuck just put out a couple days ago.
That was big.
Okay.
That was big.
That's the sign of the times. Yo, fact checking was a problem and it was too politically biased. So we're going to get rid of fact checking. We're going to go to community notes and we're going to make sure we come back to the roots of Facebook and Meta, which is freedom of expression. Okay. The platform that was the most, one of the worst ones at suppressing speech, did a complete 180. Now you can say, well, Zuck's playing the game. He's looking at Elon. He's like, yo, I should probably start doing this. Whatever the reason may be, what the market demanded this change.
Agreed.
And it happened. How fucking awesome is that?
I agree. And I do think Zucks is becoming a little bit more right wing. Just he's waving an American flag while he's surfing.
Doing too much jujitsu.
All that stuff. But in general, who cares if he actually believes in it or not. The fact is, it's getting done, whether it's Trump winning, Elon, whatever it is. The net impact, the result of Zucks doing this, is that there will be more freedom of expression. And I think that's also the reason Trump won. Everyone's so worried about the process of how something happens versus the end result. And it's like, Americans just want inflation to come down. They don't care how the fuck you do it. Just get the inflation to come down. And everyone's so afraid of like the process of, do we ruffle any feathers? Do we, you know, make someone feel like they're excluded in the process of doing it? And
that's such a great point.
Everyone was turned. Dude, New Jersey almost went for Trump. It's 5%. It hasn't happened since 1992. What the fuck is going on? Like, New Jersey's not a conservative state. Well, you had a lot of people that were like, this is not, we're not doing this. We're just not living in this type of world. And I couldn't imagine what the world would be like from a political speech perspective if Elon had not bought Twitter. this whole talking about what's going on in the UK and stuff, you need magnification for that, which means you need an algorithm on your side. If you don't own the algorithm and Dorsey owns it and the algorithm just censors you, I mean, like, where are we in 2024?
Yeah.
2021.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I think this underlying whatever, so anytime this conversation comes up, it always gets me so fired up. Like, this is the vibe shift we're talking about, right? I think this is what's going to underpin everything for the next 4 years. This like fire and passion to just get the shit, just get it fucking done. Just do the right thing, get it done. Just get it done. It's going to be messy. We're going to make mistakes on the path there, But what does that build? That builds a foundation for an unbelievable future. For an unbelievable future. And an unbelievable future, what does that imply? A lot of freedom for people to chase their dreams and their needs and wants, which implies in a capitalist society an extremely strong economy that's very responsive to the demands of the people. So what does that imply? A lot of business creation. And then you'd layer on top of that artificial intelligence just by happenstance being birthed at around the same time. And once some can make the arguments because of what is happening in society, right? Now you have this like fuel, this like this jet fuel that you're adding on top of this fire that's going to supercharge that growth. And I think if I tie this back to the politics discussion, I think the politics of the next 4 years will be underpinned by this, by whatever that is. It's like a massive push towards progress, growth, building, entrepreneurship, freedom. You know, and the United States is going to be the home for it, and then hopefully the rest of the world adopts it in some way. We're seeing, you know, we're seeing the UK trying to do some stuff, right? We've seen, I mean, else like Argentina is a fucking poster child for this. Like they were really ground zero when it comes to a lot of this stuff with Milei going in and just like ripping the bandaid off and everything. And the United States is trying to, like, how cool is it that a 330 million population country is trying to model itself in some respects to Argentina, which is what, like a tenth? What's the population of Argentina? Like 50 million?
The fact that Milei is cool and like 46. Free speech is cool. Like, and yeah. Like, you know, you're seeing this vibe shift in Silicon
Austrian
Valley.
Economics is cool.
Austrian economics is cool. I mean, Silicon Valley girls that are more on the side of like American dynamism are actually not offended if you know, use the wrong pronoun. Like, they're actually like, yeah, no, it's actually cool to just like say whatever you want. Like, that's not happening in New York City or LA, right? You still have different dynamics of how women who tend to be a little more liberal think about this stuff. But the fact that there is a real vibe shift that is happening, it's exciting, dude. It's very, very exciting. And the fact that Silicon Valley invested $80 billion last year into defense companies. They're trying to find the next Palantir, the next Anduril. Defending Western values, that's cool. Like, if this really does become mainstream and parts of Europe that are under massive levels of censorship and that are kind of okay because they've elected the officials to enforce that stuff, if they start shifting their vibes, that's not the CCP. Xi Jinping can't just take a tank out and start killing them. Like, they actually can vote to change what's happening in the country. And I think that could be a worldwide vibe shift at that point.
And then imagine if Trump can buy Canada and Greenland on top of that, bro.
Dude, that's the funny
thing. And Mexico and the entire of South America. Bro, it's the United States of America. Let's just get the whole fucking continent.
Obviously, Trump is trolling, but he's also kind of not trolling. And that's what is funny. And it's, here's the thing.
He's negotiating for something. Yeah.
Like, we're not going to fucking buy Canada. But the point is, he's getting Canadians to think what it would be like if they had more conservative financial policies versus like crazy taxation. And you get some Canadians that I've talked to that are like, you know, it wouldn't be too crazy. They know it's never going to happen. But the fact that they're thinking that way, it changes the dynamic of everything.
I mean, there already are vassal states. The question is it official or not?
Yeah.
You know, our second most viewed territory is Canada, bro.
Really?
Flame Hans in the comment section below.
Hey, if you don't believe that America is the world's biggest and most powerful empire that humanity has ever known, I'm sorry, you just don't understand what's going on yet.
And
I don't say that with pride, honestly. I think there's a lot of things in that that are really, really, really messed up.
Yeah, I agree.
That's just the reality of the situation.
The older I get, the happier I am that it's the United States over anyone else. Dude, like when I was in high school, I was basically a card carrying communist in high school, you know. And as you grow older and you realize, like, you actually have to work for what you want in life. You have to really pay taxes if you work and you're a little successful, and it hurts to give up what you've worked for, and other people might not be doing as much work as you. So, like, why exactly is the world, why should Elon be forced to pay 80% taxes? Like, you really start realizing, I want to be like those guys one day, which means I have to create value, not just find a way to centralize all that value. And you, the United States, for all the issues we have, is the only country in the world that has stayed true to that as much as we can. You know, we've had a lot of different policies here and there, but we've stayed true to this one idea. This is why all the venture capital, all the Mag 7 are here. The Magnificent Seven are in the country that is magnificent because we allow them to be magnificent, even with all the regulations we have. And if that's ever lost, I don't know where planet Earth goes at that point.
Yeah. And we were able to return to those values just by putting weight and power behind the First Amendment.
Yes.
That's all it took.
Yes.
That's all it took. Like how, dude, I'm so proud to be an American.
I don't get why people don't understand. I don't get why people don't understand that if you think something should be banned in terms of speech, what if one day you say something that ends up being decided as the thing that gets banned? Like, how do you not get, if you have control over what should be said, one day you will say something and that will be controlled. And then you have no political speech. You have no free speech. You can't say what you want to say, even if it's trendy in the moment.
Yeah. It's so obvious.
Someone else is going to come up with the rules.
Do you buy this thesis that our education system in the United States is indoctrinating people or has indoctrinated people to value communist and socialist principles versus capitalist principles?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Look, not universally. Not universally, but there obviously are different ways that I would say college more so than high school finds, you know, the general purpose curriculum. You have to take liberal arts to even like have the basic amount of credits before you can move on into your major that I just went through at Rutgers a couple years ago, where you're taught a lot of this dog shit about like, just like everything needs to be equal and everything's okay. It's like, no, that's not the case. And I don't know if the entire, you know, education system in the United States is geared towards that, but it's definitely not geared towards, hey, you know, if you work really hard and build your own empire, that's a good thing. It's meant to say, how do we find a way to control the people that have worked very hard? Essentially, I'm saying that it vilifies people that are successful because they get so successful that then you start thinking, what do they do to get that successful? It must have been something bad. And then it reverse engineers a path on how to save that. And I think people have to go through their own education. And sometimes it, you know, dude, I broke up with my first girlfriend because I realized that she was a communist. But yeah, like I remember 2018, it was a tough conversation because every time I brought up a business idea, because I'm young, I have all these ideas, I want to be an entrepreneur, and she's just shutting them down. And I start really digging into it. And I'm like, oh, she doesn't believe in like success. She doesn't believe in being a billionaire. Like to this day, she still has these beliefs. I see her Instagram story sometimes. It's like, eat the rich, billionaire shouldn't exist. I'm like, I made a really good decision in the summer of 2018 because I want to be a billionaire one day. And I can't have my girlfriend tearing me down. So like you have to go through these life experiences to get to that point. But the people that don't go through those experiences and that are stuck in the indoctrination of like, this system is always going to be bad. You are always at the bottom of the system. You should always be complaining. There's never a chance for them to think in a different way.
And you know what's unbelievable to me is that the only, like, I'm a firm believer that the separation of an extremely wealthy, successful person, however you want to define that, versus one that is not, 95% of it is effort. It's just effort, bro. You just fucking grind.
But that's
it.
Hard to say, because when you say that, you're implying 99% of people don't work hard, Farzad.
Fuck yeah. They don't work hard enough. 100%.
Or they're not in a country where they have freedom. That is
exactly.
There's a bunch of people that work really hard and they live in a system that takes the benefit of their hard labor and gives it away to other people.
That's a much bigger, from a global population perspective, that is by far the biggest variable. But in a country like America, there's not enough effort being spent on the correct question. That's two things that our education system has completely failed to do with our population. They don't really teach people how to ask the right question, and there is I don't know where is the push to try and almost instill this mentality of like, just keep fucking trying. Keep trying to bring value. Keep trying to make this work. Just, it doesn't matter how bad it sucks. I understand that you want a very great life. I understand you want balance. If you want this, it requires some level of sacrifice and pain. You have to go through it. And one of the fascinating discussions on the channel as well with Larry's podcast is like, the idea of the immigrant mentality. That's why there are so many successful people in the United States that are immigrants. It's because by default, they come with that sort of mentality. A lot of them do, which is like, I'm going to work as hard as I fucking possibly can. And this is not a debate of legal or illegal immigration, right? I'm just saying, if you're an immigrant in the United States, you tend to have some values around hard work that are different than some of the native population. And that's not to say that the native population is not as hardworking, but by default, if you are from outside of the United States, you've had to scratch and claw in ways that very few people have had to do in this country just to get here.
Yep. Yep.
That's just the truth. And I'm sorry to say it, that's just the truth, right? And so like, that's an advantage by default. So how can we get that type of mentality, that type of effort to be truly celebrated as the thing that's going to get people what they want? If people want success and all this stuff, it comes with effort. Unless you're extremely lucky, it comes with effort well beyond what you think is required. 10, 100x times more. And it fucking sucks, but that's what's required.
And you know, the real joy of this also is the process of trying. The process of actually failing and like it's not working out and going through the pain of it not working out, but then realizing you have the power to make something else work out one day based on the lessons you learned of the thing that didn't work out. I was talking to a friend the other day in Malaysia, and he said, you know, if I make a lot of money in the stock market on some swing trade and I post about it, Amit, you're going to try to figure out what can I learn from what I did to then make some money in your stock market investing journey. Someone else in Europe, because he visits London a lot, is going to be really jealous that he made a lot of money on that swing trade. And they're not going to want to learn what he did. They're going to want to stay away from him and kind of just like bask in the envy that they have. And I think the more and more we understand the nature of America, it's when you're successful, people want to learn how they can emulate you and get to your level, not be afraid or tear you down. And across the world, it's this idea of like, well, let's just not even encourage trying. The best example I do to try to break down communism and capitalism to people is Michael Jordan. Like, Michael Jordan was born with these God-given talents of just like being tall. I'm not as tall. Does that mean that we have laws that stop Michael Jordan from being a basketball player, or that artificially allow me to have more points on my three-pointers than Michael Jordan because I'm 3 feet shorter than him? No, because that's not a way we should understand the world. And we should allow Michael Jordan to work as hard as he can in the gym to make sure his God-given talents then can become manifested in his actual work ethic. And then you go out on the court and you leave it out there in the games. But you don't stop him, or you don't feel envy that he's successful. You bask in his glory and hope one day other people can live up to that.
Yeah. But if we go back to like the conversation we were having earlier, a vast majority of people feel that way. But the discourse around that for the last 10, 20 years has been led by the minority that is like, no, that's fucking terrible. Everybody should have equal outcome, right? That's what gives me a lot of hope, is that there's data to back up the fact that what you just said is actually what is felt by the majority of the people, vast majority of the people. And now there are megaphones out there that will actually allow that to come through instead of it being suppressed, instead of it making people feel like their very logical, natural want for that is somehow wrong because they don't see it out there in discourse, or it's somehow called evil. We've finally figured out how to somehow fix the algorithm so that it's more representative of the masses. And that's the beautiful thing of the time we live in today, ultimately.
Yeah, because most people want to be successful and they want to try hard. But there is a small minority that thinks that anyone who's successful got there because they didn't actually work for it. And yeah, there's definitely luck along the way, all this stuff. But anyone who's really successful worked their ass off to get there. And the lesson needs to be that anyone has the chance to actually try to do it.
Yeah, you just got to survive the suck. You got to survive the suck for a lot longer than you think you have to. And then when you think you're there, you have to do it again and again and again and again and again.
That's the thing. You have to survive the suck. And then when you get a little bit of momentum, you have to work so damn hard to keep that momentum to the one point where you finally can say, okay, I can rest a little bit. I actually worked hard for this.
Yeah, 100%.
And then when you do succeed, you just have to be okay with the fact that a lot of people are going to hate you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have to have it. And then you go through a crisis of like, why did I do this? And then it's a battle, man. Life is a battle. I'm a huge believer of that. Life is a battle. and if you find the beauty and the suck, it's a lot more tolerable, and it's a lot more fun. And I think that's the, if you want to build and you want to actually fulfill your dreams, it sucks a lot more than it doesn't. But if you learn how to enjoy the suck, it's actually like incredibly rewarding. It's so rewarding once you hit those thresholds. It really is. Oh, so fun, dude.
This is awesome.
We love having you on. We really do. This is great. This is so fucking fun.
I love it. This is good. I think we're doing this like once every month or something. So it'll
be fun. Yeah. Next month in February, let's, it feels like the world's going to be completely different in just a month. Trump's going to get in office.
Yeah.
Earnings season is going to start kicking in. Specific Tesla, Nvidia, so on and so forth. Dude, I already feel like the, once Trump takes office on the 20th, like, it's going to be chaos. It's going to be total and utter chaos. Because by default, if they want to put all the changes that they want to put in, it's going to create chaos.
Yeah. The first 100 days are going to be nuts. And you know that Elon Musk and Vivek are just like, they're building this giant hammer, and like on the 20th,
bang.
Boom.
Yeah. Can't wait. Amit, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Thank you, guys. I think my ex is right there. Amit is investing. So appreciate it. This was awesome. And I'll be on next month.
And on YouTube as well.
And on YouTube as well. Amit is investing. Yep.
Awesome. All right. Bye, everybody.